Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Our guest, Chris Britton, knows how to use poetry to promote new folk. Later, Garrison Keeler will promote the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. Welcome to the program, Chris, and Youth Hope. What exactly is Youth Hope and where did it come from?
All right, so Youth Hope, it has not always been Youth Hope. Matter of fact, it started off as Christian Friendliness, and about 1936 is when it was developed by some ladies that wanted to do ministry to immigrants that were coming to Rock Island area. And from that point, they had done backyard Bible clubs, food pantries, and whatnot. And it wasn't until the 80s when there was a guy by the name of Mark Drake that kind of took things to the next level with an idea about creating a safe place for youth. And so in the 90s is when we developed youth centers and a camp. So now, as Youth Hope, we have two youth centers, one in Rock Island, which I'm the director at, and we have one in Moline, and we have a camp in New Windsor, Illinois.
How did you happen to get involved in all this?
I happened to get involved by accident, and it's rather a funny story, right? I was shooting some hoops in the church parking lot right around the time in the evening when there was a 15-passenger van. I remember it like yesterday. And it was full of life, full of students that were coming out, and they were walking into a church building. And I said, what is going on? All these kids are walking into this church building on a Monday evening. A couple guys came down, shot some hoops with me and said, hey, aren't you coming? I said, I don't even know what's going on here. And that's what began my journey. I met Mark Drake that day, and I've been around ever since.
So when did you start working for Youth Hope?
So I started to work at Youth Hope in 1995, believe it or not. And that was when they had their first youth center right on 11th Street, 2707 11th Street, Rock Island. It was a building that was remodeled to a youth center in 95. And myself and three other teens at that time were chosen. We were the chosen ones to start just learning some work ethic and running a small business with the concession stand, and that's where it all started there. So I've been working there since 1995.
Well, you're here this morning because one of the things that you have students do, and your name was given to me specifically, is have them do poetry and music. And in fact, I was at a funeral at Friendship Manor, and two of the waiters were people that do programs, poetry for you.
Wow.
And they said, you got to talk to Chris Britton.
Okay.
And several of the people at the funeral were residents of Friendship Manor, and they said, that's right, we've heard this group, and they are fantastic.
All right. No pressure, huh?
No.
No, we were ordered that.
Yeah, they said, you've got to have...
I was summoned here.
Not as if we have a choice.
Right.
So explain how poetry fits in. Usually when you think of youth centers, you're thinking billiards or basketball, hoops.
You know, exactly. And that's how it started. I mean, we had foosball and the whole gambit of video games and toys. And really, to make a long story short, it was about 2010. I graduated and came back on full time at this point, directing the youth center. And what I started to see was kids that were coming with all this energy and you know, we've got the basketball programs and other things going on, but what if we could engage some of the skill and the talent that they have, and they don't have to suppress it here, but they could actually use it? So I had went in to a youth conference of youth workers that were doing something in California, and they were doing poetry, and it was attracting. They were filling up churches, they were filling up coffee shops, they were filling out, and they were doing poetry. And I brought a couple DVDs back, and I met with four teenagers, and I said, we're going to start a poetry program. And they looked at me and they trusted me enough to say, okay,
what's
but
poetry?
They didn't know what was going right. was going to happen after that. And so what happened is I think that what it sparked with the poetry deal was that there was a connection with the students in their heart. And once they, out of the overflow of their heart, and people love stories. people love stories. People love true stories. And we live in a day and age where reality TV, all this is the big, big things. But so what if the kids could experience this hope through poetry, and they can let things off their chest and get open and get real?
How did you convince them they could write poetry?
You know, it was from, there's this one DVD I had bought back from California, P4CM.com, Passion for Christ Movement, and they still exist today. And there were a couple poets. They were newer, kind of hipper, younger kind of poets. I popped the DVD in, and they were like, you know, those guys look cool. They actually are, you know, it's not corny poetry. You know, to them,
right.
they were thinking that I was going to run an academic English class,
right?
And I said, you know what, we're going to take a lot of the stuff that you actually learned from English class, a lot of the adjectives, pronouns, and alliteration, and all the literary devices. But what I learned was that the poetry that we do, we call it performance poetry or spoken word poetry. And what it is, it's not better or worse than academic poetry, but how they define it is, it's poetry that's not just meant for the page. It's meant to be experienced in person, or it's meant to be heard or witnessed. And I would explain that's the kind of poetry that we do. So it's not a poetry reading. It's actually an experience, because it involves them actually performing the emotion of the
poem. So how did you – I mean, number two question is, how in the world did you get them to stand up in front of an audience? And that must have been a little hairy at the beginning.
It definitely was. And to be honest with you, you know, I don't know who made this quote up, but, you know, you hear the quote that says you can't lead where you haven't been yourself. So I found myself – I had to challenge myself a lot, because I didn't know. So I had to kind of lead by example. And I had got into a couple open mics and poetry slam competitions myself, just to understand what I was trying to teach. I would get my hands on every book about performance poetry that I could, kind of dissect it and say, hey, how can I teach this? And so I had to kind of be the example in the first generation of poets that we had back in 2010. They were kind of the guinea pigs, and there's a few of them that are still around now, and we laugh about it, but we didn't know what we were doing. So there was a lot of trial and error and a lot of learning. But what happened was, after the first year of students, where we had our first performance at our Rock Island Youth Center, and we didn't have any more seats left in our building. We were using office chairs, and our poets had to stand on the back of the wall and
wow.
and just wait for their turn. And I think what happened that night, where there were other teens that were in that room saying that if these guys could do this, you know, if these young ladies could go up there and do this with no experience, but their knowledge from school, then I think that I can try this out. So that's how we recruit some of our students. We ask them if they write poetry. They say, hey, I could never be like you guys. And we say, you're perfect. You're perfect for
right.
it. Because that's how we all started,
right.
too.
Why do you think people are, you know, it's not only your students, your kids, people tend to be afraid of poetry. Else, poetry's not my thing. I just never got the hang of poetry.
Right.
I blame the academics. You know, I really do. There's a guy named...
So do the students, incidentally.
I was going to say, you sound like some of my students at this...
a guy named Perry, who back in the 30s did this whole thing on oral tradition versus formal.
Right.
And he went to Yugoslavia and he recorded all kinds of folk stuff, and he said that when writing came in, the first writing was simply taking the oral stories. There was no one Homer. There were all kinds of people telling stories and repeating stories and so on. And he said the act of writing changes the way you think. It just is completely different. Prior to that, and still today around much of the world, telling stories is the big deal. And formal structure, which I believe in, came later, and you can divide the two. And what you're doing is getting an oral tradition going. I'm sure they write this, don't they?
Yes, it's all original pieces that they write. And that's one of the biggest things is something from their heart. And that's hard. Some of the first poems that they write usually are fictional.
Yeah.
About some other character that they make up. But we try to find the issue that they say, hey, what do you connect with about this poem? And they say, well, you know, I don't have a dad at home. So I made that character. I said, well, if you were to write a poem about that,
right,
what would that be? And then you start to see some of the heart kind of unfold. And then there's people that are like, hey, me too, or there's something similar. Or when we go out in the public and then adults hear that, well, for one, you know, one of the biggest fears is public speaking. So they automatically are getting the accolades for just being willing to go up there and be vulnerable. And then secondly, to be about a topics that are tough to talk about.
Do you do any kind of criticism of what they do?
You know, I'm glad you asked that. And I think one of the reasons why it's successful is because we're very honest. And it's hard. But one of the things that we promote with this program is they're going to learn life skills. And I teach them that to become poets, it's really about two things: becoming a better speaker and becoming a better listener. So we say you can't become a great poet without
right.
learning how to listen. So you have to listen to your peers. You have to listen to the feedback. We're in the culture where nobody loses, everybody wins, everybody gets the trophy, nothing's
right,
bad.
Yeah.
You put your effort in, and you know everybody has to win. And there's some people that are flies on the wall sometimes that they just want to come in and see how we practice. And sometimes I say, hey, you guys might think I'm a jerk, but I have to tell them that this was a horrible. And I say, how can you tell them that? They're talking about, you know, their family. They're talking about.
Yeah,
and I
yeah.
say, they know my heart. I say that
right.
in first connected to the relationship I have with them so they can trust me. But second, they trust me enough where they allow me to tell the truth. Just last night.
That's hard yeah. for any teacher to do,
it
I
is,
think.
You yeah. know. But I allow them to do that with me as well. So I'll
and
go
do
up
they
there.
Do it?
Oh, you know, they have a field day with me.
Just that's a good idea. Yeah,
that's something.
I did have a class once that
right.
sat in the back row and held up 10, 9, 8.5,
yep.
4.
See?
Yeah, but did the students ever get to criticize you?
That's,
oh,
they did that to
wow.
me as I was lecturing. And it sort of went downhill from a 9
tough
to a
crowd.
I ended up with about a 4, I think.
Tough crowd.
But I encourage that, too, because I think that's right. You've already answered my next question is, what good is it for these kids?
Okay, yeah.
And the answer is, you know, not only public speaking and self-confidence, mm-hmm. but they probably discover things about themselves, talents
oh, yeah.
they didn't know they
yeah.
had, and also fears and joys they don't know they had.
Oh, exactly. And just even a real quick story to touch on that is that we have a young man that's one of our leaders at our youth center right now. He joined the program, and he was the opposite. He was a kid that, to be honest with you, as a youth worker, he was kind of like your kid that you did not like when he came because you're like,
right.
oh, we're going to have to lock the doors. We're going to have to, you know, one of those kids. And his sister joined the poetry program. And he had got kicked out for a while, and he said, hey, can I come in to the poetry? I said, why do you want to come to poetry? You want to mess up
right.
practice? Or? And he said, I just want to listen. I really like the stories. I said, if you don't say anything, man, just sit over there. And anyway, week after week, he would come and listen, and he was acting perfect. And I said, what's going on? And one day he came with a poem. And I said, hey, you think that you would get on stage one day? And he said, no, I never would do that. I never would get up there. And I said, I think you probably will. And anyway, he's leading some of the poetry classes now.
Wow.
And he came, you know, to our country. He came from Rwanda. And it helped him with his speech better, right? And there would be times
right.
when he was at our practice, and one of the critiques was, you have to open your mouth when you talk. You have to learn how to enunciate. And he would walk around with a pencil in his mouth. And because I heard from someone told me, hey, sometimes if they don't enunciate, have them recite their poem with a pencil or a marker in their mouth, and then they have to really over,
right.
you
right.
know. So he would do that. He'd walk around. And now he actually so at Rock Island High School, there's a biology class or something where they had to do a project and make a poster. Well, he raised his hand and said, can I make a poem about this instead? And it was something about smoking, right? And so him and another one of our poetry students were in the same class, and they did a duet poem. He was played as a cigarette, and she played as a smoker, and they had this back-and-forth
wow.
poem that they did. And the teacher said, wow, can you perform this for the science department? And then they performed it for the science department. Then he said, hey, could you perform this for Rock Island School District?
Wow.
So well, when people ask that, hey, what is this doing for the kids?
Right.
They're able to take this out in their lives, and they're able to – and I don't know – without something like that in this kid's life, what would have helped him to get to the point where he's comfortable speaking in public, sharing his story? And now it's leaking out in academics and school, and teachers are recognizing, like, hey, this is something that's pretty cool that this kid is able to articulate.
Well, that's great. You don't happen to have any examples with you, do you?
You know, I have an example of a poem and this kind of goes back to one of your questions, what happens sometimes in practice and when we critique. And a lot of times there's things that spark off of our writing exercises. And this poem that, if I have time to share it really quick, is from a writing exercise that happened where it was just a simple writing exercise, but something kind of unlocked, and our students wrote about this. And this is the piece that I wrote. And the writing exercise, I had a photo of an old house, and the question was just, can you write from the perspective of the house? And there was lots of kids that, you know, they were able to write about their home and some experience. And this is what I wrote. And the title is The Old House. It's not really a creative title, but I may just be a house. Old, rugged, 7 decades standing in same place. People have come and gone. There's one I'll always remember, 12-year-old Dawn, crying Christmas morning. Through frosted windows, she sees neighbor's new bike, tires crunching through fresh snow. She saw through my eyes, upstairs windows, joy. I'm just a house, but how I wish I had enough heat to hug her tightly, to squeeze out thoughts of her cold-hearted father nightly. Her heart was stepped on more than welcome mats. I heard crying Christmas morning. My greatest gift was a door with a lock upstairs in a closet. Praying, eyes sitting low enough to limbo with depression. I'm just a house. But she made me feel more human. The more inhumane she was treated, I never felt so needed. Even though my bones creak some nights, I managed to weather the storm strong for her, hiding locked inside of my heart. The next morning, window frosted, father still as absent as presence beneath her Christmas tree, I awoke in a beautiful pain, freshly tagged in a wooden framed floor, said blessed.
That's great.
Ooh. more.
Well, more. Which who have the weirdest gift book, Harrison Keeler's? Chris, that is just remarkable. I have discovered that when you give kids an opportunity to perform, it can transform their lives. It really can. And I've seen that over the years so many times, just doing plays. It's amazing. And you're to be commended for being sucked into this program.
Thank you.
And now running it.
Right.
Chris Britton, how do people get in touch with you? Where are you located? Where do the programs go on?
Right. Great question. Our main office, our mothership, if you will, is at 3928 12th Avenue in Moline. That's where our executive director, Mark Drake, and our main office is. And my office is on 11th Street, 2707. 11th Street, Rock Island, and that's where we have our programs for our kindergarten through 12th grade. And our poetry program is on Wednesday nights. And again, we have students that come in and check it out.
Time Wednesday night?
6:30 to 8:30.
6:30 to 8:30.
Yes, sir.
Chris Britton, you're doing great work. Keep it up.
Thank you very much.
Now we'll go to a guy who is going to tell us about the Composer's Day, but Writer's Almanac, one of those programs. Anyway, it's time for Garrison Keeler.